Good morning, Bob. Yes, it's me again, Mo Moskowitz, professional radio personality and pool maintenance consultant.
If you listen to NPR's Morning Edition, then you already know about Mo Moskowitz. He's a hyper showbiz character who barges into the program with an unrelenting series of pitches for his new programs, new formats, movies, records, and so on. The creator of the Mo Moskowitz character is my guest, Robert Kaplow. There are several other facets to Kaplow's professional life. He's the leader of a band called the Punsters that specializes in song parodies. Their work has been featured on Fresh Air. He's a high school English teacher in suburban New Jersey, and he's also the author of several novels for young adults, including a new novel called Alessandra in Love. But let's begin with how he created Mo Moskowitz and started doing sketches on Morning Edition.
I had written a song about Steven Spielberg. And it was the summer that E.T. and Poltergeist had come out, and there was, you heard all those things about this man was making $1 million a day. And I thought, here's a chance to do a topical song. So I had written this song, Steven Spielberg, Give Me Some of Your Money. And just on a whim, really, I mailed it to Morning Edition. And I got a call, and I went and I just did the interview with Bob Edwards as myself, but somewhere along the middle of the interview, it became Mo Moskowitz doing the interview. You know, the mask fell away. And
had you already created the Mo Moskowitz character?
Yeah, he was in the song.
Oh, of course, right.
Yeah, well, in fact, he was only developed because the song was too short. So I was thinking of a way to just enhance the song somehow conceptually. And I thought, well, if this guy Spielberg indeed has all this money, then he's probably besieged with these terrible, you know, no-talent desperados calling from a phone booth in Times Square by the foreign news booth there, you know, trying to get through somehow to make the connection and get their terrible project sold. So I said, okay, that'll be the bridge of the song, is you'll hear this guy, you know, putting the money in the phone booth and trying to get through.
Yeah, hello, Steven. Mo Moskowitz calling from New York. Yeah, right, I know you're a busy man, Steven. I'm a busy man myself. There's another phone booth over there. Why don't you... Excuse me, Steven, my secretary. Now, Steve, as far as I'm concerned, you are what I call a genius-type guy. And I have a script that is, to coin a phrase, sock-a-rooney. Listen to this, okay? Guy comes down from outer space. Is this great or what? Right, he's in Martha's Vineyard looking for the Raiders of the Lost Reese's Pieces. Is this great? I mean, I'm sort of a genius-type guy myself, right? All of a sudden, this shark from the Twilight Zone comes out of the... Wait, Steven, I didn't get the best part!
Eventually, what you started doing is writing sketches that you cast people from NPR into. You gave them parts, you sent them scripts.
Yes, actually, it was kind of fun in that it became a fairly hip thing in NPR to be in a Mo Moskowitz sketch, so people liked to do it and were very agreeable about being in it. I think, you know, the show tends to be, you know, deeply serious, and I think people enjoyed... Okay, we can laugh at the show a little bit too, because a lot of my pieces really made fun of the solemnity of public radio and that particular rhythm that public radio has.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes. I'm reworking Morning Edition. Got a new concept for the show, Bob. Liven it up a little bit. You know, here, look, I want you to read this proposal.
The NPR Morning Zoo.
Oh, it's a completely new format for Morning Edition. Now it's a wake-up show. No more slow stuff, Bob. Everything is 80s. Fast. Supercharged. You've heard of radio that's like a bracing cup of coffee in the morning, right? Well, this is radio that's like a boiling cup of adrenaline thrown in your face.
That's an appealing image.
Oh, here, look, I got it all scripted out. Want you to hear what it's going to sound like. Let me run it down. You ready?
I think so.
Now we got to wake people up, Bob. This is radio at 90 miles an hour. Now, are you ready, Bob?
Ready.
National Public Radio takes no responsibility for the following program.
Play some music!
Hi, I'm Linda Wertheimer. Come on, Bob Edwards, play some rock and roll.
This is Mo.
And this is Bob. Come on, America, time to get out of bed.
All right, what's your favorite radio network?
NPR Morning Zoo!
When did you start writing fiction for teenagers?
Sometime, I had been, shortly after leaving college, I had a bunch of jobs. I'd worked on a newspaper for a while. and I had worked on Wall Street in a job I absolutely detested.
Well, doing
what? You know, putting numbers on pieces of paper. Right. I actually took my dislike of that job, and it became Two in the City, which is about this young couple who they decide, they're seniors in high school, and it starts, they decide not to go on to college as their parents want them to, but to live together in New York. And so he gets a job working in Wall Street for this this place he absolutely detests, and that became the fictional springboard for that.
The novels that you write are in the category of, quote, young adult.
Yeah. Yes.
Why do you write novels in that category as opposed to, quote, adult fiction?
I don't know if I could answer that. It's just, it's the stories that at this particular point seem most urgent to me. I don't know why. I suppose maybe people that write adolescent fiction are still, in a sense, dealing with that part of their lives and still trying to understand it and coming to grips with it and maybe even reworking it, in a sense. You know, you keep reworking it until it comes out right.
Well, the main idea in your new novel is one that I'm familiar with from my adolescence, and I think a lot of our listeners will feel the same way. And it's the idea of being, like, just obsessed with someone, but they're not really any fun to be with when you're actually with them. You know, it's only when they're far away that you really, really like them. Let me ask you to read a passage from the book that's kind of about this part.
Okay, sure.
And this is written from a girl's perspective.
Yes. So you have to make an imaginative leap and say that this is a 16-year-old girl who is writing in her journal, really, for herself. Jesus, I was mixed up. Melissa kept telling me not to see him. Of course she was right. Actually, I liked him a lot more when I didn't see him. When I was home helping my mother with the ironing, I liked to think about him. My mother would be listening to some romantic Frank Sinatra song on the radio. I'd be ironing in the laundry room, listening, and suddenly I'd find myself near tears. I'd think, God, I've got a boyfriend. He leaves me notes in my locker. Meet you fourth period for the assembly, W. I sent him a copy of E.E. Cummings' poem, If Everything Happens That Can't Be Done, for Valentine's Day. It's a great love poem. Of course, I received nothing in return from him. He had to run right to New York that afternoon, so what else is new? Somehow I wouldn't have expected to receive a Valentine from him. When I actually see him, it's never as I imagined. It's never what I felt when I was ironing. It's misread signs and sparring, and I'm not looking for any more heavy-duty intensity.
I hope you don't mind me saying that at the end of this book, Alessandra does learn more about herself and how to be more independent in all of this. And I wonder if you ever feel compelled at all writing for teenagers to have a story that has a good ending, you know, where the person matures a little bit and learn some kind of lesson.
Yeah, well, I feel more impelled myself to do that than through exigencies of the marketplace or anything. That I think I feel more that as a teacher, that so often you have somebody who's 16 and is just is so groping for some sense of that someone else has been through her pain and her difficulty, and that she's not absolutely alone in this.
Do you ever give advice to your students? Not about their writing, but about their personal lives.
Yes. You have to learn as a. It took me a long time to learn this as a teacher. There's a certain point where you have to back off too, and that I think I in my 20s went through what a lot of teachers do in the 20s, where just the teaching year just puts you through this emotional ringer that leaves you completely spent. And you go to graduation at the end of the year and the students walk by and it's like a book of short stories walking by. There's the one with the abusive father, and there's the one with the medical problem, and there's the one with the love affair, and you just say, I can't continue to do this job and rip myself apart like this. So you give advice and you get involved to a certain point, and then you have to back off.
How old were you when you started teaching?
23, 24, something like that.
Did you feel like you were distant enough in age from your students? Did you feel like you were capable of being an authority figure teaching high school students when you were 23 or 24?
Not on the inside, but I could play that particular role. I played Mo Moskowitz once, and I could play Mr. Kaplow if I have to. Really, I've created this. Mr. Kaplow is my best creation. It's this teacher that is completely giving and is wonderfully supportive and always has time. And I mean, it's the teacher I wish I always had. It's the parent everyone wished they always had. It's my best creation.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.